Back into our final hour of this program discussing chemtrails. Thanks again to William Thomas for being with us. I was blabbing and it cut off the website where you can reach him. It's willthomasonline.net if you want to send him a note or get more information. Clifford Carnicum will be staying with us and taking your calls for the final hour. His website, carnicum.com. And of course, Mark Allen from abovetopsecret.com, maybe the biggest biggest conspiracy paranormal website in the world. Mark, while Gina is lining up some calls for us, take a minute before we take this next break. Take a minute and tell us what else is going on your site.
Well, thank you, George. We've got a great, very germane to this topic. We've got a great news edition, episode number 4. People go to the website, abovetopsecret.com. Look up, there's a little new video/media. Button up there. If they'll click that and go to episode number 4 of the ATS News, they'll see a news edition all about the patent that was released and given to a defense contractor for chemtrails, which I think is very germane to this. And I think the news show is something everyone who enjoys and is interested in these topics should check out.
Okay. You got something else from a friend of ours that's on there, a guy named Dr. Kit Green.
Yes, we do. And I personally flew up to Detroit a couple weeks ago. We interviewed Dr. Christopher Kit Green, the one and only, and all about the H1N1 virus, the vaccines associated with it, and a whole lot of information everybody really needs to hear in that video. And, you know, George, we have some stuff from you with Corso up there, too.
You know, I'm envious of you for that Kit Green interview. I tried to get him on the program a couple of times. I guess I'm not as persuasive as you, but if the listeners don't know who he is, Kit Green is sort of the Fox Mulder. I mean, he was on the weird desk for the CIA for a long time. Very interesting guy. All right, we're lining up phone calls for Clifford Carnicum and Mark Allen. When we come back, we'll get to the phones. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. We're going into the phones with your questions about chemtrails for our guests, Clifford Carnicum and Mark Allen. Wildcard Line, Santa Monica, California. Is the name Talon? Talon?
Yes. The question I had was, they were always talking about they're putting barium particles in through the streams in the air and whatnot. Why? What is the purpose or the outcome that they think the government's trying to do?
Well, we discussed a couple of possibilities. Cliff, you want to take that one?
Well, barium is an element that has many interesting properties. One of the strongest is its electrical nature. This is an element that, when subjected to sufficient energy and the right type of energy, as we discussed earlier, can become electrically charged. And if you can electrically charge a particle, extreme, and by the way, the nature of the size that I'm speaking of here is not 10 microns. I'm speaking at the submicron level for almost everything that I'm speaking of tonight. But you can alter the electrodynamic properties of the atmosphere. Specifically, if a person really would like to take the time to read the HARP patent, you will find a specific reference to the deliberate introduction of barium elements for the very specific reason that I am speaking of. And to say that let's say this: if you want to do it, it has to be done somehow. So if you're considering the atmosphere as your scale, not a place, but your scale of operation, the planet, the globe, as your scale of operation, it is the atmosphere that requires modification. The HARP patent will make just in a couple of minutes I've been here, I found 3 explicit references to the deliberate introduction of particulate matter, specifically for the purpose of enhancing what's called electron density, the ionization level of the atmosphere. So there are very deliberate purposes to which specific compounds or elements can be placed.
Mark, I know you guys took a look at this patent, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Again, God, I just feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over again. The patent, nowhere in the patent does it say we're going to squirt it out the back of a jet at 38,000 feet where it could just pretty much go anywhere. I would think that with all the great, brilliant minds we have, there would be a whole lot better ways to apply that stuff if you're going to apply it for these purposes than randomly flying jets back and forth across the sky.
Cliff, you want to address that?
Well, I think you need to define your methods. I mean, actually, you've got to do it somehow. You're after modifying the atmosphere. What's a sensible method by which that would be done? Like I said, aerosols have a history back to the 40s and the 50s. When it could be done, it was done. There is nothing particularly unusual. You know, take a look. Take a look at the research projects related to aerosols. You could spend your life studying deliberate aerosol introduction into the atmosphere and the studies that are done with it. You know, one cannot say it's not a viable means. In fact, it's actually a very sensible means if you're dealing with modifying the atmosphere. Remember, three-quarters of the mass was within 7 miles. You know, what's the common level which aircraft can fly? Up to 7 miles.
So sensible to modify the atmosphere, not necessarily to deliver an agent to a specific target.
Well, you have to set the stage, number one. In other words, if you're after creating a particular modified environment, you need to do that first. After you've done it, then you need to determine how you're going to use that modified environment. And like I said, there's a lot of possibilities there once you have a control and direction of energy.
Well, let's look at it from a scale perspective. You know, you have how many jets would it take squirting out how much barium into the air to have any effect on the atmosphere anyway? And I ask this in all honesty because I don't know. But in my mind, it would take a whole heck of a lot of planes, thousands, I would think, shooting barium to get enough of it concentrated to the levels required. And that's, you know, taking into consideration the winds are going to disperse it who knows where. But would you not agree, Clifford, that it would take a heck of a lot of aircraft to do that?
You know, I've done a paper on this subject if we want to read it or find it. And it brought up that very question. And the question is it physically feasible? Is it feasible to modify the atmosphere using aircraft? And we'll have to find that paper. It's out here. We'll dig them all up somewhere. But the conclusion from that paper was that, yes, it is feasible. Imagine a layer 7 miles thick. Okay, it's a trip down to the grocery store. 7 miles thick is a majority of the medium in which we're speaking. Okay, it's fragile. It is quite possible to alter the chemistry, and you know you can ask the question of whether or not the atmosphere has been modified by simply looking at the question of visibility. Okay, if the air is clean, you can see up to roughly about 120 miles. Right, if there's stuff in the air, you don't get to see 120 miles, and you can determine to at least a fair degree what the concentration level of particulate matter is in the atmosphere. By visibility alone, you can make a very reasonable estimate.
Okay? You know, I appreciate the 7 miles thick, but it's the around that gets me. You know, this is a huge planet, so we have a 7 mile thick layer that covers hundreds and hundreds of thousands of square miles in surface area, if you will. So the surface 7 miles thick, crazy winds. Again, devil's advocate. And skeptical. It just seems it would take a tremendous volume to have any impact at all on that.
You know, I don't go by seams. I did a project to study that question. The paper is on the site, and everyone can examine whether or not they think that paper is reasonable or feasible. That's the best I can offer.
Fair enough.
Clifford, you might want to send that paper. Email it to Mark, and maybe you can put it up on the site so
Absolutely.
People can see it.
Well, it's on the site somewhere. We'll find it.
Okay. All right. Eric in Michigan, also on the wildcard line. Hi, Eric. What's on your mind?
Hey,
hello?
George.
Hey.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
You can hear me okay, right?
We can.
Okay, very good. I have several extreme points. Let's see. Title 50 of the United States Code, Chapter 32, Section 1528. This was relayed to me by a local FBI agent. After a whole week of calling, I finally connected with one who said, yep, I can't talk to you about it, but go check out this particular statutory code site, and it states that they can experiment on a local populace if they provide a 30-day advance notice to the local ruling autocracy. Also, the elevation concern that Mark brought up, December 05, for a whole hour, I sat in a snowbank and viewed sky Jets about 5 minutes in separation. The vertical tail section had nozzles that were prominently displayed as allowing an effluent, emitting an effluent. Okay, and the engines were either on the wings or they were at the base of the vertical tail section, whereas these nozzles were up higher, and it was clear that the effluent was emitting from those nozzles. And I can guarantee you, being on the ground eyeballing this, that wasn't 38,000 feet. Now, relative to the conspirators and their family members, Whitley Strieber and others have revealed the fact, Kathy O'Brien, Transformation America, she was a CIA sex slave that was sold into the program by her dad.
Yeah, we had her as a guest.
Cheryl and Lynn Hersha, same thing. So the Mark says, well, hey, why wouldn't they be concerned about their own kids or their own family? Well, some of these people, or most of them, really don't care. Now, the EPA recently categorized CO2 as a dangerous effluent, right? Dangerous chemical. A particular chapter of the EPA, they have a website, and here it is, N for National, T for Treasury, E for Employee, U for Union, 280.org, NTEU280.org. And what these EPA scientists did is they reviewed the purportedly valid scientific data regarding fluoride. And what did they discover? It's fabricated fraud. Don't you think, based on that, Mark, where you have, parts per million of fluoride in your so-called municipal drinking water that your government says, hey, it's safe. It's safe and it's great for drinking. You can bathe in it, no problem. Well, go to their website, NTEU280, and see what the EPA scientists at that chapter 280 have to say. Go to fluoridealert.org.
Fluoridealert.org. Good points. I'm going to let Mark answer. Thanks, Eric, for the call. Go ahead, Mark.
Right off the bat, Eric, you know, I appreciate that. I would need to see who the people behind the website you just mentioned really are, because anybody can create a .org website and claim to be EPA scientists. With regard to someone selling their daughter off into sex slavery, I'm just not quite sure how to respond to that. That person just should be shot, I think. And if, seriously, and if that's what we've come to, then we're all screwed. And that's pretty much all I can say about that.
Clifford, anything to add to that caller's comment?
No, I don't.
Okay. International line, Dave in Ontario. Hi, Dave.
Hi, George. Good to talk to you finally. I've got some information on low-level spraying in Hamilton, Ontario here, but I wanted to quickly touch base on how it is that you can't get information out if you want to try to blow the whistle. I've been trying to get stuff out for 15 years. In fact, I left messages on your machine last May, and I contacted Above Top Secret, who sent me an email, but I found it months later buried. Didn't see it originally, didn't come through, and it's a nightmare to try to get this stuff out.
Well, you have the floor.
Okay. What I've seen was the jets, looks like F-16s flying on a, not a grid pattern, but parallel, maybe every city block. It would be north of the escarpment here in Hamilton, and through increments, they would fly parallel to the street. And I used to flash my flashlight at them. I'd just catch them going over the apartment complex I lived in because you could hear them. They make a lot of noise. I could hear them flying by. And a couple times I flashed my light at them. And the third time the guy came in so low, and I'm talking these things are low. Like they were probably a 3-inch wingspan. I don't know how high that up would be, but they were that low that they looked like about 3-inch wingspan. And the third time he came through with a spotlight pointing down to the ground, and I saw this mist enveloping the plane. I didn't even think it was a plane at first. I was wondering what the heck it was. And then I could see it when he got closer, it was a plane, and all this mist was around him. And I've also seen it where they fly depending on how much rain clouds are in the sky. It'd be every 5 minutes to every 20 minutes. They'd make these passes by, like city blocks apart, and I'd watch the clouds evaporate and a wind current start from the escarpment towards the lake. So I think they're using it, A, as weather modification, and the worst part is for crop contamination. There is so much mold they found in the food that comes into the city. It's this white mold that they talked about that they found in the bats that were dying in caves, and it probably explains where the honeybees are going to and butterflies and everything else. That's how bad it is.
Clifford, comments?
You know, on my side, I go by what I can see, what I can record, and what I can analyze, you know, and I know we have to make a lot of projections, or we try to make a lot of projections about specific methods, and, you know, the fact is specific details, let's say, of dissemination are simply not available. The evidence indicates multiple systems have been used or are considered. So specific details of actual method, and, you know, we get off in these discussions of, you know, things that cannot be affirmed or refuted in any way. How are you going to talk about the existence on a nozzle on a plane when we can't see it? We have to deal with the reality of the consequences and impact of what we see and what we can measure until you get a proper and direct line into examination at the source. And at this time, and for the last 12 years, there is no way that seems forthcoming.
Yeah, Dave has some interesting details there. And Dave, you might want to send an email to Clifford and share further details on what you saw. He might get a chance to analyze it. But it's sort of like the UFO field. You know, people have very credible sighting incidents and very specific details about what they saw. But by the time an investigator can get there, the thing is gone. And while it's interesting and anecdotal, what do you do with it as an analyst? Mark, you're familiar with that, the influx of that kind of information.
Oh, yeah, big time. And I would like to say to the caller, please write this down. Mark, M-A-R-K, @BTHEabovenetwork.com. Email me that stuff. You know, and the only other suggestion I could offer is get a video camera. You know, videotape that stuff. Give us something we can, you know, wrap our eyes and minds around, and we're with you.
I want to ask another question. We don't have time to go to the phones again, but maybe it's something that has to be answered after the break, but it's about the Ukraine. You guys have both seen the reports, maybe exaggerated, out of the Ukraine about some sort of a pandemic there. There are also isolated reports about planes being seen spraying a milky white substance. Clifford, any thoughts that there's a connection?
I have no access to information that anyone else doesn't have access to, and we know these reports exist, and people draw inferences and connections. But again, if I don't have the information, what can I possibly say that would clarify that which beyond that which is circulated in the milieu?
Seems like we've seen some indications that those reports out of the Ukraine might have been exaggerated, that maybe it's covering up something else, some kind of a bioweapon accident or a release of chemicals of some sort. Mark, you know anything about it?
Only what's, you know, been put up on the site, and there's been a whole lot. You know, my short answer would be, you know, if you're looking over here, they might be doing something over there.
George, if we have a second, I would like to make a comment.
And sure.
It's related to the very emphatic statement by the earlier guest that it is absolutely impossible to consider the fact that there is a global biological aspect to these operations. And
okay.
I would simply say that I think that statement it's unusual, it's premature, and it is, I regard it as somewhat preemptive. In the sense that how could one make such a statement when we have not even begun to discuss the information and evidence that is available on a physical level?
Fair point. Clifford Carnicum and Mark Allen, stick around. We have a lot of people on the lines with questions for you. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. We are having a spirited discussion here with Clifford Carnicum and Mark Allen about chemtrails. A lot of folks on the phones. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can as soon as we come back. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for staying with us, everyone. Interesting conversation with Clifford Carnicum and Mark Allen, and earlier with William Thomas. We're going to the phones east of the Rockies, John in Michigan. Hi, John.
Hello, gentlemen. And I want to thank you for being so patient, because I can hear the frustration in your voice.
I'm not frustrated. I'm having fun.
Well, me too. I was just listening to it. It's wonderful. The point that I wanted to make was, well, first I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I was a driver instructor safety supervisor in Los Angeles driving for Greyhound, and I got exposed to Gulf War illness in Oceanside, California, at Camp Pendleton. So I know about Gulf War illness. And listening to Art Bell and the Coast to Coast programs over the years, being retired on disability now, there's been plenty of this topic come out. And one time there was a circumstance that came up probably in a year and a half or so into the chemtrail story. There was a gentleman that was up in Washington State, I believe, and he had some tankers that were flying spraying over his property, low flights, let's say probably 10,000 feet or less. And evidently one of the nozzles on the spray got clogged up or something, because a big glob of information that he sent to the CDC came back that it was something that they didn't recognize.
Big glob, meaning a big glob of material that fell on his property or something?
Yes, it fell in his backyard, and it was foamy stuff. So he is an intelligent individual, and he was very careful and sent that information to them. And they said that they didn't recognize what it was. They said it was definitely a biological pathogen, but they didn't recognize what it was. That they assumed it was probably a military type, and that was the end of that conversation. I mean, no more information came out about that at all, period. It just disappeared in a dark room somewhere.
Clifford, what do you do with a story like that?
Well, you know, I consider it as an account. What I do is I consider it as an account. I basically make note of it and file it, and generally in my work, I look for patterns and corroboration. I know that I think I'm aware of that particular story. It's quite interesting. It is an event. It is an account. I don't afford any special privilege to any single isolated event, but it certainly sets the stage, at least for raising some questions, even at that early level, about the unexplained existence of certain biological materials. I think that's fair to say.
I guess the ideal would be if John's friend who had this experience saved some of the sample. It didn't send it all to the CDC.
I think agreed. That'd be helpful, sure. You know, if we have, you know, anytime I do things, if somebody sends me something, I tell them to keep most of it and just send me the minimum amount to accomplish the task. So you save it for the time. If somebody actually does step up and do their work properly, that we have it available.
Is John still there? John's gone. West of the Rockies, Bobby in Santa Rosa, California. Hi, Bobby.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Yeah, I find the chemtrail thing, like, probably the most disturbing obvious thing that's going on, actually, but I've seen this stuff for quite a while, and my dad was in the Air Force for 23 years, I believe, and it's definitely something that's it's not a contrail, that's for sure. I think I may have I wanted to ask Clifford if he has any knowledge of the polymer strands attaining vertical velocity from exposure to sun rays or maybe even electrical charges. Because I believe I collected some one time, and it had this peculiarity of wanting to float vertically. I mean, later it broke down, and actually I think it got me sick when I breathed it in. Had it contained, but anyhow, I think Mark, you're making Cliff a little frustrated. He's been studying this, and I don't know where you've been living or observing from, but it's been in the news in Northern California, and there's, you know, been a lot of rhetoric about it. I find it just disturbing and incredibly disturbing that there seems to be nothing we can do about it.
Well, I think Mark is asking the kinds of questions that that need to be asked, and that I would imagine that Clifford expects to hear. Cliff?
Know anything about the about polymers floating by being stimulated electrically or by solar radiation?
I guess two things there very quickly. George, yes, absolutely correct. If we don't examine and ask questions about what it is we're trying to answer, how do we ever get those answers? So,
sure.
You know, in terms of, you know, any differential and vertical velocity, do I have any specific information on that? No, not at all. I've actually never recorded or had a direct observation of the material. I've had it sent to me. I've had the reports sent to me. I have no video of that in motion. What I have done is spent extensive time, studying the nature and chemistry and physical characteristics and biological characteristics of that material when I do have an appropriate sample. And that is what has been done. And that work becomes more and more complex, especially recently.
Mark, anything to add?
No, other than, you know, I just want to make it clear that there's hundreds of thousands of people. And Clifford, thank you for understanding my questions and why they're being asked. There are hundreds of thousands of people and millions of visitors who come to a website and they ask these questions. So, you know, I'm just trying to ask the questions that, as George astutely pointed out, probably need to be asked.
Thanks for the call, Bobby. First-time caller Myra in Kansas City. Hi, Myra.
Hi. Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. I was just calling because it's kind of weird. I've never even thought about on another level of what I saw, but this was back, I can't tell you exactly what year, but in between 91 and 95, I lived in Minnesota going to college, and probably about every 3 months or so, I would drive home. And now you guys have made the single coolest thing I ever saw in Iowa odd. I had to pull over one night because I watched forever as I was driving south, and I was still north of Des Moines, but in the southwest sky, I could see like a crosshatch pattern for a long time. Well, then eventually, as I got a little bit closer, the sun began to set, and it absolutely looked like a gorgeous purple and orange plaid sky because of the lines were so exaggerated and so extreme that I pulled over and took several pictures of it, actually. And so it brings up two questions. One, in hindsight, as a normal person, you look at the sky and you see the contrails are generally, in my recollection at least, of a plane taking off. So they're growing and they're going upwards. So when I try to understand what could cause a crosshatch pattern like I saw, you would think then that you'd be seeing the planes coming in, which you usually don't see. And normal planes taking off or landing or going into or with the tailwind, you know, into the head wind or away from the wind. So it seems like it would just be a series of lines as opposed to a crosshatch. So that was one question I had was, you know, are there contrails when they're descending typically? But the other thing that was so strange, because this thing that I saw in the sky actually lasted, had to have been at least an hour that I watched it and then stopped and photographed it with the sunset behind it. Recently, within the last few months, I saw an article in about Nebraska, because this is the other thing. I was watching this in the southwest sky, where the airport in Des Moines, in hindsight, would have been to my southeast. So it wasn't directly over the airport. But there's been a higher cancer ratio, I guess, in Iowa and Nebraska recently. And I was just wondering if you had any comments on either of those for me, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Clifford, is there a pattern of planes ascending or descending and releasing this stuff, or is it mostly way up there?
Well, you know, how would I say that? First thing I would do, in terms of, we won't have it tonight, but in terms of answering these questions, the first thing that I would do is one needs to make a division between three things. One, first is contrails, the second is clouds, and the third are aerosols. And we would have to describe the physics and mechanics of each of those. They are not the same thing. And that is part of the problem that happens is there is a mixing of language, whether it's a deliberate obfuscation or I can't say that. But what I can say is it's necessary to make distinctions in terms of pure definitions and the physics of what it is we're speaking of before we can sensibly even address what it is we're talking about. That won't happen tonight, likely, but at least I can make the point. The second would be in terms of ascending or descending. I would say, you know, I have photographs where I've looked at this, and I remember an initial impression that I had somewhat of the same initial impression that, hey, that looks like it's ascending or descending. All I can say, that made no sense from a physical standpoint, and, you know, I would conclude that as simply an optical illusion where you see something, you know, the Earth curves. It's a curvature, right? So if something can be seen a long distance, it will begin to, particularly if an operation, let's say, is originating from a particular location, you have multiple aircraft, those trails will converge or originate from that location, and because of the curvature of the Earth, you're going to have a convergence of those lines, and that can appear to be an ascending or a descending quality to it. I certainly would not expect that in terms of the physics or chemistry of contrail formation, of which I also have worked on extensively over the years, and those reports are also available for people to review. In terms of cancer in Nebraska, I have no specific information regarding that. I think at this stage we can only begin to open up the question of health effects, and unless you have the proper studies done, how would you begin to know what the direct connections are? The best we can do is analyze the physical materials and the biologicals that are directly accessible to us.
It's sort of a natural thing for people to make that leap. You know, they see this strange phenomenon in the sky. They learn later about cancer rates. They read stuff on the internet, and they try to put two and two together, whether they add up to four or not, because we are by nature inquisitive.
Absolutely. It's absolutely. All I can say is I try to be fair and honest in my work the best that I can be.
And Mark, you would argue that there's not necessarily a causation or a link between something you see in the sky and cancer rates going up.
Well, I mean, there's as Clifford just said, there's been no evidence of that, and I would hope that somebody's studying it. You know, with all the pollution stuff and the global warming activists that are out there and the money being funded to them, I would hope someone is studying this stuff. And I'm sure they are. We could certainly look into that. But as far as crosshatches go, 43,000 flights across America on a Saturday, you're going to get crosshatch. I mean, regional jets cross over rural areas now where they never did before. I live in Comanche, Oklahoma. You don't get much more rural than where I'm at. And I see crosshatch contrails in the sky above me.
And probably half of those are planes that you've flown on or are getting ready to fly on. Thanks for the call, Myra. A wildcard line, Scott in California. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi, guys. Just a real quick one. I hate to sort of be so obvious, but I've been listening. It's been totally fascinating and very informative. So thank you guys for doing that. But the one question I have to ask is why? What would be the motive behind the reason for all this effort and energy on the part of whomever it is that's conducting this, what could possibly be their ultimate agenda?
Scott, we've already covered that, but let me rephrase your question in a way that maybe put a new angle on it. I mean, Clifford, you know, we've looked at a lot of dark possible motives for this, all kinds of things, New World Order, population control, whatever. There could be very good motives for this. I mean, altruistic motives, I guess, even if they're misdirected.
I suppose that's possible. I suppose that's possible. If something is altruistic and for our benefit and betterment, I personally think it should be a privilege for us to know about it.
And, yeah, that they should come clean about it.
Yeah, if something's good for us, I think that would be a great thing to talk about.
Mark, anything to add to that?
You know, it's a very good question. You know, why we're building up trillions of dollars of debt, and we have been for years. Really, what is the point behind it? If it's population control, as I said earlier, you know, you're risking your own family. So that's a great question. And the nefarious deeds aspect of it, again, you've got very little control over who you are perpetrating the nefarious deeds upon. So
thanks for the call, Scott. Wildcard Jerry in Connecticut. Good morning, Jerry.
Hey, hello. How's it going?
Okay.
I got very little time. I just wanted to ask one question. Do you think the chemtrails are probably related to a future catastrophe or around 2011 or 2012 to prevent some kind of major weather changes in the future?
Clifford, maybe you tackle that
along with the HARP technology or something?
My answer to that is I have absolutely no idea. That's not meant in a flippant sense. It's just meant it's true. I think generations have had level of intrigue with the 2012 scenario and prophecies, but obviously there's been generations of people trying to decipher that encoding without any, let's say, defined results. And I'm no different than anybody else as far as access to that information. That's all I can say about that. And it doesn't mean I deny any potential connection or possibility, but I don't have access to that information because I can't predict the future.
Mark, you must get 2012 angles and allegations and almost everything, every topic that's listed on your site at this point, don't you?
We definitely do. And one of the aspects of the caller's question that has really intrigued me about the chemtrail specifically is there is so much public information out there. The governments have all admitted to it. The NOAA, the Air Force, everybody's admitted, yes, we have played with spraying aerosols in the sky for weather manipulation. Typically, and obviously, they claim to help mankind. Now, with regard to 2012, that's a fascinating question that, as Clifford said, I have to say, I have no clue if they're connected or not, but with all the craziness going on about 2012, and it is right around the corner, I guess we're going to have to wait and see.
Thank you. Thanks to all of our callers. Clifford, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the direct questions and in a good spirit of trying to get to the bottom of it. In a quick capsule, can you tell us what you need as a researcher to nail this down?
Well, my goodness, we need the active and proper participation of any authority or agency that is, let's say, protecting the welfare of the general public. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we need very specific answers to very specific questions. They're not vague. They're very specific questions, particularly on the biological side right now. We need participation. We need involvement by the citizens of the planet, not just this country, to recognize that no one owns the atmosphere, no one owns the water, no one owns the ground. We are privileged as citizens of this planet to have the benefit of life, and we should, cherish and safeguard that privilege by taking care of our home and our planet. That's what we need to do.
Clifford Carnicum, thanks for joining us. Mark Allen, anything to add?
Yeah, I would like to throw out there to everyone, including Clifford and William, who left us earlier, that, you know, AboveTopSecret.com truly is your best friend if you've got something. And that's all we ever ask. Bring us something, and we will stand behind you, and we will make sure it gets out there. And if there's a chance to, you know, round up the population of the planet, get them, you know, behind something and demand the answers, we're there for you.
Mark Allen of Above Top Secret, thanks very much. Clifford Carnicum and earlier William Thomas, it was an interesting conversation. I'll be back next Sunday night. Merry Christmas, everyone. Hope you have a good week. Bye.